It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, for real this time.
For reals.
For reals, not for play. For real, real. Hello, take two. Don't worry, we didn't lose the whole episode. We lost like 30 seconds because I was worried about the mic levels, but we're good now. I did ask you guys for money during that time, but then I stopped, so. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that started life as a spec script for Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Now, I thought you said it started life as a spec script for something else. Maybe it was both.
I lie a lot.
That's
so.
Right. I keep forgetting that part.
Anyway, it does all start to blur together. I had a different only in the world, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure I used it already. So I didn't use that one. So welcome. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 117.
Ooh.
I'm hepped up on chocolate, and Tony's all liquored up.
I'm hepped up on Strongbow. Hard cider from England. Nice stuff.
This is his second one, he says. I'm a little concerned.
Yep. All right, so...
My drunk podcast is what we're going to have to start calling it.
Oh, there's way more drunk podcasts than this.
Yeah, I suppose.
Yeah. Me at my worst in this podcast is still better than some people in, like, their most sober episode. Anyway.
Have you been watching Hannah Hart's tour
just
show or
recently,
whatever?
I'm doing the tour feed because I finally caught up on the actual Drunk Kitchen. Because I finally caught up on some other stuff. So the last, like, I'm like four videos in to the tour feed as of just a couple days ago. So that's a weird coincidence. Anyway, for those of you who are tuning in for the first time, which is weird but cool, we have a hat. It's magic. It has its own email address. You can write that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, and write it with questions, comments, topics. Keep it short. Damn it. And those emails get magically turned into little note cards that we draw randomly out of the hat and talk about till we're bored. That's the whole show. And please write the hat. We are getting low on emails. We need some. Without them, the show doesn't so much happen. So write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Whatever you want. We will talk about anything. People have written in about Charlie Sheen, and we talked about it. We really didn't want to talk about that.
I wish you hadn't mentioned that.
And yet, we did, though, right? We talked about it.
Yes, we did.
Because the hat told us to. So
the power of the hat compels us.
There you go. Keep that in mind.
That's why we get... I mean, we come here, we do this, because the hat has ordained it.
This is not fun for us.
No. We're forced to do this.
William and I aren't particularly fond of each other, really. I think we would have completely lost touch by now if it wasn't for this.
Possibly.
I don't know that I would even know where you are.
Although, honestly, I like you, but I...
Yeah, but no, okay, okay. We don't care for each other in that one of us doesn't care for the other one.
Yeah, that's more accurate.
Yeah.
But, right, so...
I paid him one time to mow my lawn, and since then, it's like when you feed a stray, you know?
It is kind of like that.
All right, so... So, William, my friend, how was your week?
Oh, it was, it was okay. I saw Into Darkness.
Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah.
All right.
And it was...
For a second, when you said Into Darkness, that just sounds like one of 8,000 PG-13 rated horror movies that are out these days.
True.
How did you feel?
They did some things better than the first one and some things worse. So it was kind of a wash.
Give me an example of what you think they did better than the first.
Well, I thought the story had at least slightly fewer plot holes. I mean, of course, you know.
It was simpler, too, though.
Yeah, and it was simpler.
And it still had several, especially near the end.
Right, but I thought the plot, yes, especially.
Like a half hour before the end, you could have ended it, and it would have been.
I don't know. I mean, I just thought plot-wise it was less. It strained credulity a little bit less than the first one.
All right.
However, I felt like some of the character and relationship elements were a little weaker. And even though, you know, from an objective standpoint, it might have been a wash because they did this right and they did this wrong, the character development and character interactions are more important to me personally.
Yeah, no.
So overall,
enjoyed it less.
Less, yes. Yeah. I enjoyed it less.
I'll go with that. Actually, based on this, the producer has invented a brilliant sitcom based on the new version of Star Trek that I'll have to tell you about off the air because it is spoiler heavy. but it is a really good idea.
I thought, what's his name who plays Spock, did a better job playing Spock.
Did a remarkable job.
Yeah, much better job.
Well, as I said before, at the climactic moment of the movie, trying to give you a sign as to what scene I'm talking about without actually.
Oh, yes, right.
Which
I can't see.
Oh, sorry. It's supposed to be really emotionally heavy, and I could not care less, except that I'm actually annoyed. I found myself getting a little bit misty, and I figured out it was Zachary Quinto's performance. His performance of Spock dealing, like, suffering from severe emotions and trying to deal with it and stuff actually impacted me emotionally. I thought he did a really good job.
I thought the guy who plays...
Ezzy's here, by the way.
I can never remember these people's names. The guy who plays Bones...
Carl Urban. I never forget him.
It seems like he turned his characterization of McCoy down a little bit.
Yes, thank God.
Well, and see, it kind of bothered me when I first saw it, but then I realized, actually, his performance in the first film was a little bit over the top. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was entertaining, but I do realize now that, yeah, he probably did a better job.
Well, and that was a place for it. This movie, if anything, is heavier on the referential stuff.
Yeah.
And you do that in the first movie, you know? You don't do that so much in the second movie.
In the second
movie, we're supposed to be buying into it now.
Right. What I thought was really missing from the film, and what made it less enjoyable, I thought, and really sort of a departure from the original, was there were a lot of opportunities in the story for there to be interactions between Bones, Spock, and Kirk, like you saw in the original show. Little meetings they had with each other, arguing about what they should do and shouldn't do. Lots of opportunities for that were completely missed.
They had some, but they kept it to dyads mostly.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not, I mean, that is arguably a very unique thing that the original series pulled off, was that wonderful sort of triad interaction.
Yeah. Now, I think they were trying also to be very ensemble with how they were presenting the cast, you know, give everybody something to do. And don't put too much emphasis on those three guys or whatever. But I think they overdid it. I think they really needed some of those moments between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy to really, I don't know, give it that original Star Trek
feel. There was some good Spock McCoy.
Yeah, I suppose
there was quite a bit of Kirk Spock.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say there was good Kirk Spock.
Well, there was one...
And there was some decent Kirk McCoy.
There was one part in the film where... I mean, I'm thinking of specifically the plot conflicts. You know, early in the film, there was some serious conflict about one of their missions.
Yes.
And this would have been a perfect time for the three of them to talk about this and certain conflicting...
Would have been adorable.
...ideas.
Absolutely.
And
And the producer is home, and she looks so relaxed.
Yes, very relaxed.
How'd it go, baby?
And you?
Yes.
I guess she's relaxed.
How'd it go? What was the crazy position?
No crazy position? Well, there's one that if I told you, you would think it was crazy, but...
Yeah, I think most of what you do is crazy.
Yeah.
At yoga.
Yoga is so relaxed.
No, you just think most of it is crazy.
Hey.
But there was one moment where the three of them were together talking, and actually it was my favorite line from the film is in there.
Bones, what are you doing with that tribble?
No. No, it was a different line. I'm not going to say it.
Okay.
But it was my favorite line in the film, and it was a great moment for the three of them, but they just didn't have enough of those.
No.
And so anyway. But I think it's worth seeing, I guess.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Like I said, I probably won't own this one, but I enjoyed it.
The one person in my house who's kind of an original series fan who thought the first one did a reasonably good job of capturing the spirit of the original called this one a disgrace. She was very unhappy with it. And the reasons that she was unhappy with it were things that I was bothered by as well. But we don't have to get into that, I suppose.
You're getting awful low on the thing. You might don't talk quite so quiet.
Okay.
Anything else?
No, not really. You know, anyone who's following the Briar Rose Project, I'm still trying to figure out when a good time for a read-through. It's probably going to be July, but I'm going to have to work out some other things before I know when that's going to be. Also, let's see, what's the other? Oh, did I tell you that I was going to submit something to the...
You were thinking about it.
Well, I was having some technical difficulty getting something submitted, and I almost thought that the cosmos was trying to tell me something.
But then you realize you don't believe in that shit?
No. But for some reason, a couple days ago, I went ahead and tried it again,
yes.
And it worked, so it's out there. I don't know if anything's going to come of it.
Oh, you got to send me a link or whatever, or send me the thing.
Suppose I could. You know, it's one of those things.
I don't have to post it. I just want to see it.
No, I know, but I it's one of those things where I'm feeling like I'd almost be relieved if it came to nothing, because if it comes to something.
You got shit to do.
Yeah.
Hence my not doing it in the first place.
No, but why I often find myself in this situation.
Yeah, I don't.
Where. But I guess I just feel like, you know, if I don't, I would feel a lot worse if I didn't try it than if I try
it. As the guy who doesn't try it. No, you feel okay.
No, I know I would feel worse.
You get more sleep, so it's good.
Yeah, I'm a different type of person. I would wish I'd tried it.
And the other exciting thing going on with all your projects, 2 days from now, we're finally going to sit down and start working on our secret project that we can't tell you all about. Yeah.
I'm very, very excited about that.
Yep.
I think of all the things I've been working on and I am working on, I'm probably more excited about this secret project than any other kind.
Which then means bigger hopes to be dashed.
Well,
love that you get your expectations up.
Well, it doesn't bother me. I mean, you know, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I can't help but get excited about it. And
I think it'll be good.
I think it will work out. I think it's going to be great. I'm really excited about it. Other than that, this year in general has been a great year for finding really cool projects to work on and making some real progress with them, and that's really exciting for me. Because for a long time the novel, my third novel, was sort of getting in the way of everything, and now it's done and it's kind of freed me up creatively to pursue other things, and I'm very excited about that.
Mostly dance.
Yeah. So I'm sure you have a lot of things to talk about.
Let's see. Went to the doctor today. I have gained 3 pounds, which, all things considered, I'm pretty happy with. This is my first trip to the doctor since before the injury. So I was expecting pretty bad news all around. My activity level decreased significantly because, you know, couldn't freaking get out of bed. And my eating got a little worse, partially because there were emotional components and stuff. So I kind of figured all my numbers were going to be worse. And I did gain 3 pounds, but that was it. I expected worse on that. My blood pressure was great. And then they did the blood tests, and I got the results this afternoon. They are almost exactly as good as they were last time. I still have a 6.0 on my A1C. I don't even know how that's possible.
Now,
like, it's awesome.
3 pounds, though, I mean.
No, that's nothing. No, I've been floating around that time anyway.
Yeah, 3 pounds. You can have a 3 pound, 3 to 5 pound difference from weight from one day to the next.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried about that.
It's not really about gaining weight.
The point is, My A1C was just as good as last time,
yeah,
which
great.
Was really good.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how that's possible. My friend Ben's theory is that regular exercise can have lasting benefits even if you have to stop. That can stick with you for a while. So it's entirely possible.
I'm sure that's true.
And now that I'm back on, you know, the horse and I'm going to the gym 4 or 5 times a week again, should just be, you know, nothing but better from here. So I'm pretty psyched about that.
That's good.
Watching a fair bit of TV. The producer and I have dabbled a little bit in the new season of Arrested Development.
Yeah, we watched the premiere.
We've watched the first 3 episodes.
I don't think we're going to keep watching, honestly.
I think we will. It is very different. It is a very different structure, different setup. And you can't go home again. That's a thing. I mean, there's no way it was going to be the same thing. We're very disappointed in that first episode.
Yeah.
And there are very specific reasons. Jason Bateman's character was done very poorly in that episode.
That's what I thought.
I really enjoyed the second and the third one.
Oh, well, maybe we'll try.
I would encourage you to at least go one more. They are character focused. That was Michael Bluth's episode. The next episode is George Bluth's episode. The episode after that is Lindsay Bluth's episode. Mm. And so it's more focused there. But yeah, so far the second and third I did like. The producers seems a little more disappointed, but still willing to watch. And, you know, just for closure's sake, I mean, it's like 13 episodes and then it'll be over forever. So unless there's a movie, whatever.
Well, I thought the first one ended in a nice kind of closure.
Yeah. I mean, well, and that's they're all sort of dealing with the same time period. It's sort of what happened to everybody in that time period.
Yeah.
Also, as of this morning, I am caught up on Defiance.
Hmm.
Still really enjoying that show. The most recent episode notwithstanding, most recent episode kind of sucked.
Oh, you know, come to think of it, I'm probably at least an episode behind. Because last week, they didn't have one.
They didn't have one.
Okay, this so week, yeah, they had one. I haven't seen this week's now that I think
Be
about it.
Be prepared for it to suck. I was unhappy.
I don't know how I'm going to see it, because we used to watch it over lunch when the older member of the household came home for lunch.
Yeah.
But now the younger member has finished school, and she hasn't been watching it. So, and I don't think we're inclined to watch it from the beginning again, so I'm not sure when we're going to watch it.
Mm. Okay, yeah, so you're as far as I was pretty happy up to the point you are.
But then this past week wasn't very good.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like it's ruining the show.
Mm, okay.
They basically, it was a very multi-story episode, and it had 3 plot lines that have been around that I neither care about nor like at all. And then a new thing that to me was really gimmicky and tacked on, and I was kind of pissed off.
Okay.
So, I was not happy with this episode. But in general, no, I'm still very happy with it. And much like Elementary, I can't really tell you why. I will say at this point, I feel that I am getting to know the Defiance characters and to like them. Mm. And that's a huge deal. Once that starts happening, then I give a damn what's happening to them.
I'd sure like to hear from someone who is also playing the game. It's a first-person game, so I know you're not going to play it.
And I can't, yeah.
We don't do MMOs, so maybe one of our listeners is watching the show and playing the game, and they can tell us something.
Yeah, let us know what's going on there. Like. I'm very curious about that. But yeah, I'm pleased with that. A lot of things just sort of ended. We haven't seen the 2-hour season finale of Elementary yet, but we've seen the rest. We haven't picked up this season of Warehouse 13. It's sitting on the DVR. I've started watching Maron. Mark Maron has a sitcom that's semi-autobiographical that's really hilarious. If you're at all a stand-up person and an alt stand-up person, I recommend you check it out, especially if you're at all a fan of Marc Maron. That's mostly it. I've been very, very pleased. Last weekend was a normal weekend, the first in a long time. We didn't go visit anybody. Nobody came to visit us. We were around the house. I got to play video games. We cleaned up some. It was lovely. We actually had dinner with the neighbors. In fact, we had dinner with the neighbors twice.
I'll be going home this weekend, I think, to see one of the theaters in Des Moines is showing Raiders of the Lost Ark in the theater again.
Oh.
So I'll be going back there to watch with my brother, who's a huge fan. And he notes that we saw Raiders of the Lost Ark in Greenfield, Iowa, in the theater, like something like 32 years ago or something. So he wants me to go over there so we can watch it again. He also he's thinking about starting a podcast that he and I will do.
Oh, that's right. I need to.
Yeah.
I need to get you that information. I apologize.
Well, he's done some research. I mean, that would still be helpful, but I don't know how or when that's going to happen, but I can let people know if that ever
absolutely
materializes.
I assume you're not going to commute there to
No.
You're going to do it Skype or something?
Yeah, we'll figure out a way to do it remotely. I also,
that's good. Then you'll have that knowledge for us.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that we are still playing Dishonored in the house.
Oh, yes.
And
have you successfully not killed anyone?
So far, but one level had to be played like 3 times that happened. And my overall opinion of the game is so far not entirely positive. It's stylistic, you know, it's nice, and I mean, there's a lot of cool things about it.
Yeah.
But it's one of those games that is really designed to be played.
Sorry about that.
It's really designed to be played several times.
Yeah.
But unlike, say, Dragon Age or Dragon Age 2, which also you have to play several times if you're going to get all the achievements, I actually enjoyed watching that be played like 4 times.
Yeah.
I can't imagine watching this game go through 2 or 3 iterations. I just can't.
Now, to be fair, I fully believe there are some games that are more or less fun to watch that are not necessarily... It's a different axis than being more or less fun to play.
Yeah,
including in replayability. On the podcast I listen to, Indoor Kids, they're a husband and wife, and frequently they play together. Generally speaking, one of them plays a game, and they play it, you know, and they're both there, though.
Mm-hmm.
And the husband is somewhat of a fan of Assassin's Creed. The wife is not, and what it comes down to is she does not like watching that game. Mm. She thinks it would probably be more fun if she was playing it.
Mm.
The producer goes back and forth specifically on Assassin's Creed, watching it. Sometimes she gets bored with it, sometimes she enjoys it a lot. And I of course, love that game. I don't know if I'd enjoy just watching it.
Well, I think the person in the house who's playing it likes playing it. I don't know if she'll like playing
Wanna
it.
Want to replay? Yeah. I think it gets a lot of its credit. I feel like the not killing anybody thing is a gimmick, sort of.
Well,
because honestly, I think most people aren't doing that unless they want that achievement.
Well, there's that, but there's also, I'm not sure how interesting the game would be if you weren't trying to do that.
Okay, yeah. But I think where it gets most of its actual credit is just for being a relatively creative and original setting.
Well, yes, it's got that going for it. And that
which is a rarity these days, sadly.
And I do like that about it. What's frustrating about that specific fact is how little they do with it story-wise.
Ah.
It's got...
It's a little myopic in its plot.
When you first get there and you realize what the setting's kind of about, it is very fascinating and very original, and you think, wow, this is a great idea. I really am excited to see what they do with this. Aside from set dressing and a few backstory things with a few characters, hardly anything at all.
It's not exactly an exploratory plot.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind the person that plays in my house, typically with games like this where a lot of the interesting things about the world is revealed in books and little things you read.
Yeah.
You know, she'll find those, pop them up, and then, you know, tell herself she's going to read them later, and then she doesn't.
Yeah.
But I've actually gone into wikis and stuff to get that background myself, realizing I'm probably not going to get very much of it in the gameplay. And there's hardly anything interesting in there.
That's a shame.
Not like Dragon Age, where even with all of its problems and everything people complain about those games is true, to me, the Mythos was very original and rich. And
enough so they made a tabletop RPG.
Well, yeah, and I'm watching, and even with the person in my house, like I say, they see something and they close it.
Yeah.
There's enough of the Mythos that's explored and revealed just in the gameplay that it makes it all very interesting, even if you don't read every document you pick up. Whereas in this game, it's almost as if they think, well, you'll just read everything. We don't have to incorporate all the interesting stuff into the actual gameplay or in the actual character interactions. And so, now, that said, I've also read that if you take the plot where you try not to kill anybody, it actually excludes a lot of content.
Oh.
So you, if you, let's say you try to play through first, not killing anyone, there might be story that you miss.
Yeah.
So maybe that's part of it, but so far. But
also, I've heard if you're doing the not kill anybody plot and you play Pink Floyd's The Wall in the background, it syncs up perfectly.
Yeah, right. No, but when I look at the wiki to get some background, it's not that interesting. And I think, man, they could have done a lot of cool stuff with this story-wise. And, you know, like, I don't know. I'm not going to go into the plot. Although, if I did, I don't think I would spoil anything.
Get out alive.
Well, no, the thing is, a lot of the stuff that usually makes an interesting plot, you know, like
he's
someone
about to go into the plot.
No,
people.
Like someone dies and it's like, oh wow, you know what happened? You know, there was a conspiracy behind this or whatever. But then they tell you exactly what happened and who was behind it and how. So that doesn't, you know, that's not something you discover as you go through the game. And so, you know, there aren't any big reveals or twists or anything that they probably could have done. You know, it's just.
At the end,
point.
You find out it was all in his mind. He's in a
snow globe, yes, right. Anyway, I'm sorry I spent so much time on that. I know a lot of our listeners don't care, but.
Yes, I'm still playing Witcher. I'm really getting into it now.
The Witcher story fascinates me. Ever since I first heard about it, I thought this would make a cool game, but it's only on. It's not on PS3, right?
The original Witcher game is only on computer.
Yeah, PC. Like,
yeah. I don't know if it was available for Mac or not, but only on PC. The second Witcher is available for console.
But not PS3?
Possibly, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think it is. Maybe it is.
Maybe it's just Xbox, I don't know. But
the story does fascinate me quite a bit. I'd be interested.
I'm less fascinated because it seems like somewhat generic fantasy. But it's sort of Germanic, which is nice. But mostly, no, just the game function. It's a game you have to work for. Like, it's not, you know, some games you jump into and just right off the go. It's like, oh, well, like this game, if you want to, this can be a really dull game. Mm. Like, you have to work at it.
Yeah.
But it's pretty rewarding if you do, and I'm having fun with it.
That's good. How's your RPG going? How's your Dresden Files?
We didn't play this week. We won't play next week. This week there was some work issues and stuff.
Well, but we didn't talk about it the week before either.
Well, we're still on our way to try and bring Helen back to life.
Wow, still doing that, huh?
Yes. People are making their sacrifices bit by bit. We're getting closer, though. They're all beginning to feel seriously manipulated, because they are.
Well, now, are the sacrifices going to stave off the consequences of bringing someone back to life, or will they still have to suffer those consequences, too?
Well, technically speaking, the sacrifices, the whole thing is designed something like a mythic journey, and in fact, one of the characters is already mentioning that. And people are like, this is stupid that we have to do it this way. I'm like, no, this is how the hero's story is supposed to go.
Joseph Campbell.
Exactly, exactly.
Joseph Campbell.
Coincidentally, the librarian character in the game, who's also played by the librarian player. So, and the sacrifices are, it's all a game, because ultimately what they've determined, what they're fairly certain of at this point, is that they're going to visit one of the few beings out there who is powerful enough to just bring back the dead.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows they're coming. And she's basically setting this up to sort of toy with them, mm-hmm. to sort of study them as they go along.
Right.
Technically speaking, they won't have a price to pay for the actual act of resurrection, because yes, it would be severe breakage of the laws of magic, but none of them are actually going to do it. They're going to ask this other person to do it, and this other person will do it. It's... And this other person isn't mortal and isn't at all subject to the laws of magic.
I see.
This other person is actually the Summer Queen, is Titania.
So there won't be any consequence to her to do it?
No.
Or to anybody else?
No. the only consequences will be whatever bargains they have to make. And so far, one has made a bargain of his time and energy going forward indefinitely. He's going to have to help out this these people in the Never Never periodically to control a problem they have going, basically for the rest of his life. And then another one has sacrificed the last vestiges of their hopes and aspirations for being a writer. They were an aspiring writer, and they have squashed that down. And then the most recent one, I don't know, it's under debate. The most recent one, in theory, sacrificed personal ignorance. They now know something about themselves that, to my mind, would be problematic and would be an issue they would have to deal with. The player isn't necessarily seeing it that way, so the player may consider it not really much of a sacrifice.
So what's the motivation of all these people to resurrect this person? I mean,
because she's their friend.
And that's it.
Well, there's one NPC with them, and he's her boyfriend.
Oh.
So he's got pretty big reasons.
Right.
But the others, yeah, no. She's a loved one, and she died. One of them probably feels some guilt, because technically he was unable to stop her death. One of them has practically grown up with her. They were like friends in high school and stuff.
I mean, I understand someone's motivation to bring someone back from the dead. Yes. Don't get me wrong, but I also, you know, people die, and yes, you know, we often have to just deal with it. So, and when you know that bringing someone back from the dead is a pretty big deal and might bring a lot of harsh consequences, there has to be some, you know, story-wise, there has to be some really compelling reason for you to decide to do it.
I think it would be unlikely that they could be talked into learning the power themselves to bring back the dead.
Okay, right.
Because that would have major consequences.
Right, right.
But it doesn't, and actually it's already been proven in at least one case that there are sacrifices they are unwilling to make.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the dead person herself keeps saying, actually, the dead person herself is sort of arguing against the entire thing.
Yeah.
Right. They keep shutting her up really fast.
Yeah.
They're like, it's so not your call. Because she's not saying, I want to stay dead. She's just saying, oh, you shouldn't sacrifice things. And they're like, shut up. Yeah. And the boyfriend's motivations are at the same time very clear and a bit mysterious. And just in case any of my players ever listen, I don't want to give... I have something in the wings
for that
shit
there.
I've got some serious shit there. Yeah, so it should be interesting. And yeah, we'll go again in another... Not next week, but the week after.
Okay.
Somebody's parents are visiting next week. All right. I'm a little buzzed now, and I'm getting sleepy, so we should go to the hat.
Well, that's...
But seriously, people, you should write into the hat, magicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. We need some questions. We need some topics. Otherwise, we'll have nothing to do, as you can clearly see.
But also, you should write the blog.
TheMagicalTalkingHat.com is very active at the moment, mostly because we have an old listener who's catching up and who has a lot to say. So you should even check some of the old episodes. There's some interesting conversations springing up there.
And specifically, I'm interested to know if you are watching Defiance and playing it. I'm curious to know what that experience is like for you.
Yes,
because neither Tony.
Really, if you're just playing Defiance, we'd be curious.
Well, yeah, I'm curious.
Although
to know
I find it weird that you would play it and not watch it. But
this question is from Bloodsparrow.
Bloodsparrow,
and it's specifically for Evil Tony and William. So I'm not sure how we can answer it.
We'll have to do our best.
Or
maybe
it might not be for. I'll just read it.
Read.
Evil Tony and William said something about evil bucks in episode 104. What is the conversion rate of evil bucks to bitcoins? I don't know.
Let me answer that question with a question. What the fuck are bitcoins?
I don't know what that is. Or do I? No, I don't think
bitcoins.
I do.
Bitcoins.
What is... Does she mean like bits? like 2 bits?
That doesn't seem right. You wouldn't call those coins because bits are actually bits of a coin.
Well,
that's where the term comes from, because they would cut the doubloons into eighths.
Right, but I mean, a bit is, isn't it a bit equivalent to 25 cents or something?
12 and a half cents, technically. But that's just a colloquialism. Originally, a bit was an eighth of the coin.
Right, but...
And so,
but
8 bits was the full coin. And so, okay. 8 bits now is a dollar.
8 bits is a dollar.
Yes.
Okay, so 2 bits is a quarter.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. Shave and haircut, 2 bits.
Well, I never really knew what the actual monetary value of 2 bits was.
2 bits, 4 bits, 6 bits, a dollar.
What?
Haven't you ever heard of this shit?
No.
Seriously, you grew up in essentially a frontier western town. How do you not know this stuff?
You know, that reminds me. Remember when you were saying I probably have some condition with my whole numerical problem with understanding encoded information and stuff? I was reading Discover magazine recently, and there is a condition that causes people to not be very good at mathematics. And I related to some of it, but not all of it. Some of it I could relate to, but not all of it. But there was some debate as to whether or not the condition is, what do they say, a core deficiency where, and I imagine the core deficiency part is you just have a problem processing like numbers specifically, doing math specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And the other theory is that it's a access deficiency, which, see, that's what I think I have. I think I have a hard time actually processing, you know, I'm saying there's wires crossed there that prevent me from doing this kind of thing. But also I think I've adapted some ways. For example, when I worked where we worked before and I worked in the accounting department, I didn't have any problem with the mathematics.
No, that you were perfectly successful.
Had to use, but I think I've adapted some mental shortcuts where it seems like I'm doing the same thing other people are doing, but I'm not. I'm using some mental tricks.
This is actually the kind of stuff I'm doing at work dealing with at work right now. It's trying to address these kind of issues in assessments.
Yeah.
Would you like to know what a Bitcoin is?
Okay.
Bitcoin.
Did you look it up?
Yes.
We should just start. If we're going to do that, we should just do it.
No.
Why does sometimes we don't do it and sometimes
as
we do
with
it?
With all things, not just on this podcast, in the world, it should be at my whim.
Oh, all right. Well, that's fine.
Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency first described in 2008 paper, in a 2008 paper by a pseudonymous developer, Satoshi Nakamoto, who called it a peer-to-peer electronic cash system. Bitcoin creation and transfer is based on an open-source cryptographic protocol and is not managed by any central authority. Each Bitcoin is subdivided down to 8 decimal places, forming 100 million smaller units called Satoshis. Bitcoins can be transferred through a computer or a smartphone without an intermediate financial institution. Would you like to know what a cryptocurrency is?
I have no idea what a cryptocurrency is.
A cryptocurrency is a type of digital currency which relies on cryptography, usually alongside a proof-of-work scheme, in order to create and manage the currency. Most cryptocurrencies are peer-to-peer and decentralized and are based on the first cryptocurrency, Bitcoin. They are generally designed to have no inflation, once all the currency has been produced, in order to keep scarcity and hence value. However, a few cryptocurrencies, such as Pcoin, capital P, capital P, capital C, O-I-N, no spaces, so Pcoin, do have small amount of inflation. Cryptocurrencies are also designed to ensure that funds can neither be frozen nor seized. Existing cryptocurrencies are all pseudonymous, though additions such as Zerocoin, terrible name, have been suggested, which would allow for anonymity. That's interesting. You should find this very interesting.
I don't know if I understand it completely. This is in Wiki, by the way, right?
Yeah, Wikipedia.
I don't know if I understand completely what this is about.
You create a... Well, I'm bad at this, too. I'm bad at the concept of encryption, exactly. But you create an encryption system.
Yeah.
And you use that to secure a digital currency. And because you're using, in this case, an open source encryption system, nobody controls it. Therefore, there's no bank, there's no reserve, there's nothing like that. It is, in theory, an uncheatable figure.
Right, and the value of your currency is completely determined by supply and demand, I guess.
Yes, yes.
So if the value goes up, and you're, it sounds like you're also, the amount of the currency is fixed?
It sounds like it in this case.
Such that...
It is a finite amount.
So that if its value goes up or down, it's all about how much in demand it is.
Nobody will ever add in more bitcoins.
So if it goes up in value, it's not inflation, it's more people want it. If it goes down in value, it's because less people want it.
Yes. And nobody controls it, per se. And even if they did, nobody has to go for it. Because it only matters if you want it.
But how is this different from, say, Lindens in Second Life or something like that?
Well, they keep adding more Lindens,
oh,
for starters, because people just earn them magically. And Lindens transfer out into other currencies, so I don't know.
Wouldn't these?
I mean, I don't know.
What do they use to trade? What do you use them for?
I don't know. Let's see.
I mean, if it's just fiat money, I mean, they can be used for anything, but presumably, in theory...
Bitcoin network protocol operates to provide solutions to problems associated with creating a decentralized currency and peer-to-peer payment network. Key among these is the use of a blockchain to achieve consensus and to solve double spending problem. Don't tell nothing about nothing.
All right, I don't know if I understand all of this.
Well, no. This is in no way related to evil bucks as I understand them. Keep in mind I am from a completely different universe and not evil.
Well, I presume it works the same way that normal, good bucks would.
No.
Why would evil bucks work any differently?
Because they are evil.
Well, I know they're evil, but in this sense...
No.
I don't see how they would be any different.
As I understand evil bucks, their value is determined at the whim of the whoever's taking them.
Oh, I see.
Of the evil... How do I explain this? You know how you have issues with current economic setups and the power dynamics involved?
Sure.
The uneven power dynamic. Mm-hmm. This is the ultimate form of that. Essentially, two individuals
mm-hmm.
want to make an exchange.
Yes.
And some part of that involves evil bucks.
Right.
Evil bucks to goods, evil bucks to nice bucks, whatever. Whoever is in the position of most power of whatever form, physical, emotional, social, whatever, can arbitrarily determine the value of the evil bucks at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Isn't that always true, though, for even regular bucks?
Yes, but these ones, this is specifically what they're designed for.
Okay.
Like, we don't pretend otherwise, and that we don't... There's not a whole hell of a lot of negotiating
okay.
with evil bucks.
I get you.
Yes, see, it's...
I see.
It's the perfectly awful. It is everything that is wrong with modern economy.
So
wrapped
if
up into
if
one
I
thing.
Go to the if I go to in the alternate evil universe, if I
yes.
go to this if I go to the store,
yes.
and I want to buy a stick of gum,
yes,
and the person who's selling me the stick of gum decides I would like for you to be in debt to me for the rest of your life over this stick of gum, they're going to charge me $100,000 for the stick of gum, and then I have to take out a mortgage for the stick of gum.
Potentially, but there are several things here. If you are significantly bigger and stronger and more menacing.
I know, but let's presume I have no way of turning the asymmetry back the other way.
Yeah, no, that then it will cost however many evil bucks they say.
I can't decide just to say no. You know what? I don't want this piece of gum. I can't do that.
It would probably depend on the specific cashier involved, the layout of the store, turret emplacement.
Yeah, that's right.
Closely tied to the use of evil bucks is a great deal of gray area in terms of when negotiations are finished.
Right.
In certain situations, negotiations have ended and prices have been determined pretty much when you walk in the door.
Yeah, right.
Some cases. So,
but what it means is that we, much like the value of bitcoins, I suppose, we can never, there's never a point where we can say evil bucks are worth this.
Unless you're the one at the time.
Well, right, but this is a very general, this is a question saying what is the exchange rate, and exchange rates are always based on what the value, you know, what the value is.
It would be difficult to publicly list an exchange rate in this case.
Right.
With evil bucks.
That's part of their evil is they don't have a fixed exchange rate.
No, fiendish that way.
Fiendish bucks.
Fiendish in their nebulous exchange rate.
I actually like this a lot. I think this is very good. I think this is pretty awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Economics for Assholes right here.
I'm really liking this. Okay, I want to buy this stick of gum. Well, yes. $100,000, you're going to have to take out a mortgage payable to me 30 years, the rest of your life. Well, what if I don't want to take out a mortgage?
Click, click.
Exactly. That's awesome.
This is some really tasty gum here.
I see what you mean. Yes, I will buy this gum for $100,000.
Please fill out the paperwork. Would you care for paper or plastic for this piece of gum?
Oh, yeah. Something about that I think is really great.
Waiting for. I brought a cloth bag from home. Do I get a rebate for that? Click, click. Would you like my cloth bag as a gift to you?
You can either give me your cloth bag or put it over your head.
Oh, jeez. I don't know why, but somehow that made it way more dark. I don't mean that literally. I guess it would that too.
I know exactly what you mean.
All right, let's hurry. We can get one more in.
I hope that entertained our listeners as much as it entertained me.
I don't know if that's possible.
I thought that was pretty funny.
All right, what do we got? It's an anonymous one. It's an anonymous one that has been abridged. Apparently, this was just a motherfucker of a question originally.
Okay.
Like, not only was it too big to fit on the card, They weren't even willing to take credit for it. They knew it was too big. And they were like, I'm going to pretend. All right. Well, I'm trying to, because when they get abridged like this, I sort of try to take them in the gestalt and sort of, you know, go from there.
All right.
Basically, this is some questions about philosophy as touted in The Matrix.
Oh.
All right.
Sure.
So that gives you perspective here.
Okay.
Agent Smith said humans define reality by suffering. You recall this?
No.
Agent Smith was talking at one point when he had Keanu tied up, or maybe Lawrence Fishburne, I don't remember, was talking about
Lawrence Fishburne, yeah.
How, like, originally they created a matrix where, like, humans had everything they wanted.
Yeah, and they kept,
and they flipped the fuck out. They, yeah, like, couldn't cope
like,
with
like
it.
Like, it was a dream they had a hard time.
Yes, they needed to suffer for it to be real.
I suppose.
So there's sort of a dual question here. Okay. One, do we agree with that?
Okay, go ahead.
And then the secondary part, if that's true, I'm not sure how this stuff, but if that is the case, is the real world in the Matrix, don't use air quotes on a podcast, but the real world in the Matrix, probably just another extra shitty Matrix.
Okay, unpack that for me a little bit, because sure I understand.
So, if the humans are defined by the suffering.
Right.
And so they've got the Matrix, and they suffer some in that.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's hope, and things can get better and shit.
Okay.
They suffer a lot more in the real world. Like, there's lots more shit, you know, they're running from giant metal squids. They're basically just eating snot, if you recall.
Yeah, right.
So maybe it's a double bluff, essentially, and the machines made a crappier Matrix. It gets a little like Inception there, which is not necessarily good.
The Matrix does make some statements about human nature that I think are not, I don't think are accurate.
I personally always loved the assertion that we're a virus. I love that.
Okay. I think that's
awesome.
That's precisely the one that I don't think is.
Oh, I love that idea.
True. I think certainly we are capable of being like that. And,
I'm a shitty virus.
And we're capable of being
I'm
like
just
that.
Just a tumor, and, a slow-growing tumor.
And our more imperialistic tendencies are like that. But I don't think that is how we can completely define human nature.
I had imperialistic tendencies, and then I switched over to butter. Because the fat is comparable,
right.
So it's not even a thing.
As far as, you know, we can't accept a place that's too perfect, because we measure our lives according to suffering and so on. I guess that's an interesting idea. Of course, the Matrix didn't originate that idea, but
no, Matrix didn't really originate much.
But the idea that you can put people into a somewhat more ideal situation and they won't be able to accept it, that one doesn't ring true to me either. But see, also in the Matrix, remember that...
I think that's true. I think there are people in a modern psychological state where that is the case. The Matrix... I think there are people you could pluck today out of their lives and put them in a situation like that, and that would be a problem for them. But I believe that is a modern, largely environmentally caused psychological state. I think where they tread into stupid territory is a belief that it's inherent in the species.
Right, and remember also in the Matrix, there's people, the people in the Matrix are supposed to somehow kind of have an unconscious sense that they're not living in the real world, and they accept this, that there has to be some level of choice, or else also they'll reject the whole thing. If you recall, the architect says that on some level people in the Matrix know that something's wrong.
Yes. And also that humans make good batteries.
Well, but I'm not sure how those two things go together. If in the Matrix as it is, you know, not perfect, but kind of like the real world, and unconsciously they still know it's fake, but they have to choose to accept it on some unconscious level. I'm not sure why that same reasoning couldn't apply to a more perfect, right? Like, they know that this heaven they're living in isn't real on some unconscious level, but rather than rejecting it and having to wake up from it, they accept it on an unconscious level through, you know what I'm saying? Why
yes.
Does that reasoning work for the less perfect Matrix and not the more perfect Matrix?
I'll tell you why. You take the two concepts. The first being that the humans sort of, you know, reject something if there's no suffering involved. The second being that on a certain level they have to acknowledge the falseness of it and choose to be there. The former happened in the first movie. The latter happened in the second movie. And if we have learned anything over the years since then, it is that the Wachowskis live only in the moment and don't give a flying fuck for what they did yesterday, okay, let alone years before.
Well, and as far as the...
We are lucky they remembered there was a movie before.
In terms of whether or not the world where the Nebuchadnezzar exists and stuff, and that's also a machine-oriented world, I mean, why not? Just like you just pointed out.
I just think it should not? Be. I think it should just be shitty matrices all the way down. Yeah. It should be a TV show, and it'll be like a reverse Quantum Leap. Like every single episode, they wake up in a shittier real world. And every time he says, "Oh boy."
Well, and of course that question is
eventually
raised.
They're not even human. Like they wake up and they're like an earthworm
that,
or something.
That raises the question. Could
it
you,
doesn't raise any
no,
real questions.
No, it does. It raises the question, could they make a matrix that's so terrible that human beings think, well, this can't be right.
This is
and so they keep waking up, so they have to make it a little better. Like, it can't be too bad, and it can't be too good. Because if that's what Agent Smith said, then according to him, you could keep making it worse and worse and worse, and humans will always accept it because
Dude,
it makes sense.
This happens in role-playing games. Several of us have figured out the key to making your players really love your campaigns is to make their lives a fucking hell. You just throw so much shit at them and they love it. I don't know what it is. But no, this cracks me up. So this is like the worst version of the can God make a rock so big he can't lift it thing.
Can the machines
make a matrix so crappy even humans won't accept it?
That's great.
Like, okay, this time we just won't give them feet. No feet in this one. How are they going to get around? Exactly. And you know what? Everything will be connected by interstate highways, but no cars and no feet. We'll see what happens. It's like they all just started selling oranges by the side of the road.
Wow, they're miserable and they just don't care. Yeah. What else can we do?
It's like the Grinch. It came without presents. It came without feet. That's what happens. You get down to the shittiest matrix ever, and all the humans just hold hands in a circle. And it's like,
and then the machine's hearts grows seven sizes or whatever.
Oh my god, I never realized the Matrix is just the story of how the Grinch stole Christmas.
At least it's close.
Oh.
Anyway.
Well, now I don't know whether to call this episode Economics for Assholes or the Shittiest Matrix. Probably Economics for Assholes. We'll see. Shitty Matrix is all the way down. Also good. I don't know if I... Have I put a swear word in the title before?
I don't know. I don't know.
Shitty Matrix is all the way down. It's pretty nice.
We're probably out of time.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you, Blood Sparrow and Anonymous.
Thank you much. We'll be back next week with more Tarzan and the Beast. That's all I got.
Okay.
How the Machines Stole Christmas. Maybe that's the title.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.